it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at ArmorAll.com. Armor All. Less work, more clean. Terms apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
In today's show, we cover the five biggest news stories from the world of Formula One, which this week are. It is a Hungarian Grand Prix. Domenicali calls for sporting sanctions. Tsunoda says that he learnt from De Vries. A Haas driver is set for a new contract. And Vasseur speaks out on Ferrari rumours.
Goodman, and you're listening to the fantastic Cut to the Race podcast.
Hello, my name is Ben Mylander, and you're listening to the Formula Nerds podcast.
Hi, I'm Rosanna Tennant, and you are listening to the incredible Cut to the Race podcast.
Hi, I'm Jordan King, and you're listening to the Formula Nerds podcast.
Hi, I'm Crofty. You're listening to the Cut to the Race podcast. It's lights out, and away we go!
Welcome to News from the Nerds, the midweek news show brought to you by the team at the Formula Nerds. Once a week, we update you on everything you need to know from the world of Formula One. Make sure you keep up to date with all the latest news by visiting our website at formulanerds.com. Now, today, I'm joined by the trusty twosome, Abby and Sam. How's it going? I'll start with you, Sam.
I'm very well, thank you. I'm very well. I've got over whatever illness I had the past week or so. So I'm feeling, you know, when you're really ill and you'd give anything just to get back to normal. I've now kind of, I'm getting back to normal, so I'm appreciating a lot more than I used to. How are you?
Appreciating feeling well. Yeah, I'm okay. Yes. You still don't sound 100%, but maybe that's just the gruff in your voice. But
no, that's my gravelly, kind of manly voice to match with my boyish charm and good looks.
Abby, how are you?
I'm all good, thank you.
Okay, so this weekend it is the Hungarian Grand Prix. Now, there's a few things to talk about. We've obviously got F1, F2 and F3, so it's going to be quite a packed lineup of motorsport action this weekend. We also see the return of Danny Ricciardo, who will be driving for the AlphaTauri team after having replaced Nyck de Vries. And there is a new qualifying format where we see a reduction in the amount of tyres that drivers are allowed to use. And this is due to, the aim of this is to reduce the environmental impact that F1 has. Now, I'm not 100% sure how much of a difference a few tyres are going to make, but what are your thoughts on the weekend coming up? Abby, I'll start with you. Are you excited to see Danny Rick back on the grid?
Personally, I am. I did miss him when he obviously lost his McLaren seat to Piastri. I think it'll be interesting, though, because, yes, he impressed at Silverstone in the tyre test for Pirelli, but he was in a Red Bull car. He was in the RB19, which we all know is like in another league this season. He's then going into AlphaTauri, which is considerably different. So it's whether he can maintain that impressive performance this weekend in AlphaTauri, whether it lives up to the team standards and how he compares to Tsunoda. But as you said, Ollie, it is a full weekend of all three championships, which will be very exciting because F2 and F3 are very entertaining to watch and have some quite tight championship battles this season as well. But just touching on the new tyre format, I think it would be interesting in quali, because as we saw in Silverstone, some teams perform better on different compounds. For example, Lando Norris in the McLaren performed very well on the hards, whereas Carlos Sainz didn't and ended up going backwards. So it will be interesting to see how that impacts it. I don't think it will happen. It will impact it a lot, but it will certainly be intriguing for those who are interested in the very technical side of F1.
And Sam, is that you? Are you interested in the very technical side of F1? What differences do you think these adjustments are going to make? And again, your thoughts on Danny Ric?
Well, I think to start with, actually, the environmental impact. It's a couple of sets each team each driver will run fewer. I think it's 13 down to 11. So, you know, extrapolate that across the grid, across each race, the season. It does have there is a fairly large impact in terms of the number of tyres used. And that's not just the logistics and the shipping, that's also actually them producing and the construction of the tyres as well. So, yeah, it's good to see those steps there from an environmental perspective. From a kind of technical perspective, yeah, there'll be some teams that run better on the hards. I think from early in the season, Williams looked pretty good on the hards, which is interesting because obviously they're always on the cusp of going out in Q2, in Q3, or getting into Q2. So there will be some things that we need to see there. Obviously, Hungary is quite a specific track in terms of characteristics. It's twisty, it's small, it's kind of Monaco-esque in that sense without the walls. So expect to see certain teams perform well and teams that have maybe taken a step forward in recent races not being quite as strong, even if maybe, you know, McLaren are stronger on the hard. So it will kind of, could be a good equaliser or a leveller out, particularly in qualifying. For the Daniel Ricciardo point, I think Abby has covered an underappreciated but important point, and it's nuance that is often lost. Yes, he performed well in this Pirelli tyre test from, Red Bull accounts, but he was in the Red Bull. The AlphaTauri is a different beast. It's a whole other situation. I imagine he would have done a fair amount of simulator work, but it's never the same thing. He's going to get into that car for the first time on Friday, and he's going to have to get up to speed with it quickly. And that's going to be difficult because the characteristics of the AlphaTauri, by all accounts from those who are in the know, is that it shares a lot of characteristics with the McLaren from a few years ago, which Daniel Ricciardo did struggle with because it's not as confident on entry. The rear end is a little bit more nervous, and he really struggled on that entry point into corners. He couldn't quite hook it up in the way that Lando did, and that obviously corner entry is a very important part of a racetrack. And if you're losing time there, that's going to bleed through the rest of the corner. So he's going to have to adapt, and he's going to have to kind of feel his way through Friday and also, Saturday as well. The race, I think it'll just be a case of, look, get it home, get some laps under your belt, build up your confidence. But I don't think we should expect huge things from it this weekend.
One other point is it will be interesting to see how McLaren manage that momentum that they've had from Silverstone. Will they be able to continue it? And Mercedes, obviously, have they really given up now? Where are they going to end up with, the Ferraris? And I'm sure Red Bull will just steam off into the distance. So we will obviously talk about this in the review show. But moving on to the next piece of news, Domenicali has called for sporting sanctions. Abby.
He has. So at the moment, the FIA are in the process of reviewing the cost cap forms that from the teams for 2022. But Domenicali has now spoken out on the process about the cost cap, saying that those who are found guilty, like Red Bull and Aston Martin have been previously, of breaching the cost cap should be faced with sporting sanctions rather than financial ones. He said, I would like the penalty to be sporting in case of infringement. It is something we asked for very clearly. There are three regulations to be respected: sporting, technical, and financial. Any infractions must be punished with sporting measures. You can't go in other directions. Now, obviously, for Red Bull, they did do a procedural breach like Aston Martin in 2021, but they also did a minor overspend, which resulted in them having a 10% reduction in the wind tunnel time and also a £7 million fine, which the general consensus with this was that it wasn't harsh enough at the time to punish what they had done. So Domenicali has now given his views, but he is confident that it is down to the FIA, not F1, to get involved and that they can be more efficient this year. What do you guys think on that? Do you think financial punishments are good enough, or should sporting ones like being removed from the championship be introduced?
Financial penalties are not, they don't work because you then factor it into the cost of doing business. It's very simple. In the American model of sports, you have sports caps or salary caps rather for player salaries. If you then go above the cap, which is allowed, they have certain kind of levels, but they have what's called the luxury tax. And when you get to the luxury tax, every dollar you are over that luxury tax limit, you then pay back X amount. And so you factor that into the cost of doing business. So if you have a fine, you're going to see the teams with deeper pockets use that to their advantage to basically circumvent the entire cost cap. It becomes pointless by that stage, because Haas, Williams, they're going to be struggling to get to the cost cap. They're never going to do that. But these teams like, you know, say Mercedes, say Red Bull, they'll just go, okay, fine. We basically don't have a cost cap, but every pound or euro or dollar, whatever it is that we spend above X point, we're going to have to pay extra for. And they'll just do that. Because why wouldn't you? If you can afford it, you're going to do it. So that's why it needs to be sporting. I was going into the Red Bull penalty, hoping that it would have an impact. But one thing we didn't actually mention in the weekend preview, Red Bull apparently have a couple of upgrades coming this weekend that they reckon could be worth 0.2, including some slightly reprofiled side pods. If they turn up with no pods, I'm going to cry if they can make the Mercedes concept work. But anyway, I digress. I was hoping that the wind tunnel penalty would have an effect. We're still not seeing that yet. There's going to be a lag time. There always was going to be. But I think this is, at this point, if you do it again, you've got to start docking points.
And I think we need to look at why is Domenicali saying this right now? It's a strange time to say it, because the only breach we're aware of was that one from Red Bull, and obviously the minor one for Aston Martin. So if he shouldn't be concerned about it, if everyone's playing by the rules, maybe he has some sort of inkling that people aren't. And at the end of the day, the word is thrown around a lot, but if you're not abiding to the rules, it's cheating. Now, you can argue that there needs to be a buffer there, which there is, quite frankly. But when we look at, you know, Ferrari and McLaren looking at each other's drawings back in 2007-2008 time, right? They nearly got banned from the sport for a year. And that's a consequence of cheating. So where does cheating and overspend, what's the line there? Because it's a very difficult line.
Going back to your point, Ollie, about why has he said this now? Rumours on social media are that at least two or three teams have overspent on the cost cap from 2022. Now, there's no confirmation of this. Obviously, the FIA is still reviewing these, but there are rumours that teams have overspent recently as well.
Who could it be? Well, I guess we'll just have to find out. We'll let everyone have their own guesses as to where those overspends have come from. I think everyone can kind of start to piece together where they think it might be from. But what I find interesting is that Domenicali is very much putting the enforcement of the cost cap at the feet of the FIA. And I get that, right? It's, you know, kind of, it's in conjunction, but surely F1 has some jurisdiction and could take some responsibility for how punishments or the cost cap or whatever the actual kind of, you know, running of that rule and that regulation. Surely they can take some kind of accountability for that and run the table a little bit to ensure that it is abided by.
I think I totally agree with you, Sam, because F1 as a commercial rights holder, right, if there is overspend or there is, you know, drama brought to their sport that affects the sport, right, it's affecting them. Yes, it's for the FIA as the governing body. However, F1 own it, right? I totally agree with you.
Does this kind of fall under the kind of there's no such thing as bad press?
Yeah.
Kind of the remit. Yeah. Are they maybe a little bit like, you know what? We don't mind the stories. We need a villain.
Mm. Yeah, and Domenicali can also look back reading now and say, told you so.
Well, yeah, completely.
Okay, right, moving on to our next story. Sam, Tsunoda has spoken out saying, well, publicly backing De Vries, saying that he learned a lot from him. What's the story and what did you take from it?
Yes, so obviously the axing of Nyck de Vries is still fairly raw. We're a week on, so starting to come to terms with it, but we are now starting to have news pieces filtered through, particularly on certain drivers and their views. Yuki Tsunoda being an obvious place to start, having been teammates with de Vries for 10 races. He actually has some really nice things to say about him, which I think is lovely, because he could have just very easily stayed quiet and thought, you know what, I need to look after my place in the team. I'm up for contract renewal. I've got one eye on the Red Bull seat. But he's come out and said that he had a really enjoyable time the past 10 races with Nick. I learned from him, and we also had a good time away from the track. He had plenty of experience in other categories and gave the team good feedback based on his knowledge. He had the pace, and as a friend, I enjoyed my time with him. So I think that's actually really telling of how... What kind of, I don't think upsetting is the word, but what a disappointing episode this has been for both Nyck de Vries and AlphaTauri, and also F1 generally. You've got a driver who is a former F2 champion. He's also a Formula E champion as well. So he has won at, you know, the highest level of motorsport. In that sense, it's an FIA World Championship. And he just couldn't make it work for whatever reason. But to hear Yuki acknowledge the experience that he has been able to bring to the team and that outside perspective from other, you know, racing categories, I think is really important. And yeah, I think it's a vote of confidence for Nick when he needs one, because, you know, very easily you've forgotten F1.
Yeah, and I was listening to the interview with Christian Horner early this week, where he was talking about the sort of the scenario of De Vries leaving. And he was saying it was clear that he was not going to be fast enough. I think we all know Christian Horner wasn't publicly backing him from day one. It was Dr. Marco put him in the car. It was also Dr. Marco who made the call to fire him. But Horner was saying, you know, when asked why now, he said, well, why leave it? He wasn't fast enough. It was never going to work out. So why prolong it? And he was even asked about why didn't they leave it to the Dutch Grand Prix? And I can't remember the exact words he used, but it was along the lines of, it's not about emotions. This is about having the right driver in the car. And to hear Tsunoda come out and say, yeah, actually he did bring stuff to the team, you know, where Horner had quite brutally dismissed it and, you know, his contributions. Yes, he thanked him in the sort of corporate manner, but to hear this and for Tsunoda to be allowed to say this as well, let's not forget, you know, the media training that everyone has. I quite like this.
Well, I think on the point about leaving De Vries in the car, so he gets his home race, there's no space for being sentimental in F1. And also, you can look on the flip side of that. That's kind of insulting. You're not good enough. You know, we've made that clear publicly multiple times, brutally so. But we'll leave you in the car for your home Grand Prix as a kind of pity kind of gesture. I don't think Nick would have appreciated it. I don't think you'd want it that way. So, and obviously I don't know Nick, interviewed him, yeah, but I don't know him. So it's, I think it's, what I'm trying to say is that it would be the wrong way to treat him. And also if you need, as he said, if you want to make a change, you're going to make the change. Why wait? I get it. I think the argument though is that he needed more time. Yes, but I think they weren't seeing that improvement. It wasn't an upward trajectory. It was, he was on a level. Maybe he needed more time to make a jump in performance. But unfortunately, they decided that that wasn't the way they wanted to go.
Abby, do you think more time would have helped him? I mean, we could go round in circles on this. I know we've spoken about it on the last show. But have you heard the Horner interview, and what did you take from it?
I haven't heard it, but from what you've just said, it just like breeds Red Bull and the mentality that they have. F1 is the elite of motorsport, and Red Bull are notoriously they're hard on their drivers. They want they want the best from them. And it was clear that De Vries wasn't performing, especially against Tsunoda. However, I do think that they could have left it until the summer break, as they had initially planned, because Helmut Marko had said, we're going to give Nick these four races to see if he can improve and then decide. But they didn't. They based it off of one tyre test in the Red Bull car of Ricciardo and made their decision. And Nick today, he's spoken out on social media. It's his first posts or first comment since the sacking of him. And he said he'd like to thank Red Bull and AlphaTauri for the opportunity to live his dream. Of course, it hurts that the F1 chance he's dreamed of for so long ended prematurely. But life is not a destination. It's a journey. And sometimes you have to take the hard road to get where you want to be. It is very sad and it is heartbreaking that he's left. But Red Bull were always going to make this decision. And like you say, Sam, keeping him in just for the sake of pity and being like, oh, it's okay, we'll keep you in for a couple more races so you can drive your home race. That's not the right decision. So they've made their decision and that's that.
Yeah, exactly. And I think there's two really key bits in there that is why it's maybe ruffled feathers, because the writing was on the wall already. But it's that we'll give him four races, but then actually then giving him two, and it being based off, as you say, one tyre test, which if this doesn't work out with Daniel Ricciardo, I mean, everyone's going to be looking at Red Bull going, look, consequences of your actions. you took one driver out because he's underperforming, you put another driver in who you just didn't have enough of a sample set on, and is a very different driver and has had very different experiences from when he was last in your team. You've put him in and he's underperformed. That's the way it goes. But Red Bull is the type of environment that will make you or break you. We've seen this before, and it breaks more than it makes, but you only need to make one. And they've made Max Verstappen. And could Max Verstappen be would he have been the driver that he is had he, say, gone to Ferrari or Mercedes? We're never going to know. But what we do know is that he is, at the moment, the best racing driver in the world. He is a step clear of anyone else he's competing against. And that's all that Red Bull ultimately need. He's bringing home Constructors' Championships for them. He's bringing home the Drivers' Championship. So you can't really argue with their strategy. It is working.
But there is more contract talk, so we are really getting into the silly season now. Abby, where is the contract talk today?
It is at Haas, specifically with Nico Hülkenberg. So obviously, Hülkenberg returned to F1 after 3 years out for full-time racing for 2023, partnering Kevin Magnussen. And he initially only signed a one-year deal with the team. But Günther Steiner is very impressed with Hülkenberg's performance so far this season. He has 9 points, whilst Magnussen only has two. And he has managed to get into Q3 a couple of times as well. So Steiner has said the new contract will be worked on soon. Gene Haas is coming to the races in Belgium and Hungary. We've already talked about the contract, but it's better to do it in person than by phone or video. The new contract won't be long in coming. It's coming, and we hope to get it done as soon as possible to be able to announce a new deal, because we are very happy with Nico. And he also admitted that he was surprised by Hülkenberg's performance this year, saying that, I didn't expect him to be in such a good shape right away. He hadn't been a full-time driver for 3 years, but he came in here and it clicked right away. We knew he was good, but we didn't see that he would be in such a good shape immediately. So the general consensus is Hülkenberg is here to stay because he has impressed Haas immensely.
And I think that's absolutely fair. And Magnussen's had a few unlucky moments. Yeah, some may say he creates his own luck. But the two Haas drivers, they're doing what they need to do. And I think, the return of Hülkenberg was such a big story. Should he be here? Should it be a younger driver? Should there be new talent coming through? But Hülkenberg's proven you can have two seasons out of the car and come back and still be on it, and everyone's saying, oh, will Daniel Ricciardo still have it? He's only been out for a few races. I think Hülkenberg, he's earned his seat in the Haas team. I wouldn't see any reason for them to swap him out at this time. He's exactly what they need. He's an experienced driver. And personally, I wouldn't swap K-Mag either. What would you do, Sam?
Oh, why have you asked me that? Well, I think on the Hülkenberg thing, that makes sense. He's coming. He's shocked us all, really. Very few people would have been like, this is the level he's going to be at immediately. Has had the measure of Kevin, which I don't think people were expecting. I think it's whether or not Haas are done with the experience and experience pairing. Have they steadied the ship enough in one season for them to go, you know what? let's try a younger driver. Let's bring some more youth back in and have a more balanced relationship within the team. I think probably not. I think probably keep hold of Kevin for another year, but I think Kevin does need to up his game. I don't think he's doing badly enough that you go, yeah, he's out. There's a clear kind of, you know, lack of performance and pace there. But he's also not doing enough to be like, oh, we can't possibly lose him. Kevin, this is saying is that if we are going to make a change, it's going to be Kevin, obviously. So yeah, I wouldn't make that change yet, but there are a lot of people that are coming through that will be nipping at the heels. There's not enough F1 seats. We know that. And we know that even, you know, people like Mick Schumacher in that environment, Haas is a difficult environment for a young driver, and he didn't have the confidence. Maybe he was worn down by the team. So it's a difficult first gig. So I don't know. It makes sense to keep Magnussen at least for another season.
It does feel like Hülkenberg is like that cool, calm, consistent driver. Whereas Kevin's almost that younger driver where he goes into battles that he shouldn't be having, and it's only going to end one way. I mean, do you sort of see what I mean? Kevin is that younger, more risky, I don't give a sort of driver.
Yeah, I do. And Hülkenberg surprised me as well, but there is a clear difference between both of them in performance. And just with Magnussen, congratulations on your new baby daughter, I think it was, who was born this week. But yeah, Hülkenberg has seriously impressed. And I think with Magnussen, his contract was a multi-year deal with an option for 2024. So I know I was umming and ahhing whether having both of them partnering together in the same team to experience drivers was the right move. Certainly looks like it. Haas have improved. I would keep them because they seem to be working well. They both seem to thrive within the environment of Haas and with that car. But yeah, it will be interesting to see when Magnussen's contract is up, whether they do renew him or whether they do go for a younger driver. Like you say, Sam, it can be difficult for a younger driver to move into Haas because of the team that it is. But yeah, it will certainly be one to watch.
And this is kind of actually where, although they don't have balance of experience versus fresh, young, you know, whatever, there is balance in both Hülkenberg and Magnussen's approach. Magnussen will shine bright at various points, that P5 on return in Bahrain last year, for example, or the pole in Brazil, obviously slightly fortunate in some ways. But Nico is that more consistent operator. And I think that's where they maybe were turned off from experience in the past, was that Kevin and Romain Grosjean are both those kind of, every now and again, we're going to pull out a P4 or a P5, and you're going to be like, oh, great. But there will be mistakes and there'll be poor performances where the level isn't there. Whereas Nico, I think, is there or thereabouts every weekend.
So continuing the sort of the driver rumours, Sam Vasseur, the Ferrari team principal, he has now spoken out on some of these rumours. What did he have to say?
Yes, so there is a particular rumour that has done the rounds this week, which kind of came from nowhere, a bit of a surprise. And we'll get to that. But first, let's address the actual Ferrari drivers for now, because there have been rumours surrounding those two as well. Charles Leclerc has been linked to Mercedes. He's been linked to now Red Bull, also Aston Martin in the past. And I'm not sure how that works logistically, given Lance Stroll is occupying one seat and Fernando Alonso is probably the second best performer over the season so far. So why would you take him out of the situation until he wants to leave? But so he's been kind of linked to those teams. It seems like a bit of a pull. Leclerc is obviously very, very talented. Those teams want to bring him in to the lineup. Carlos Sainz has been linked to Audi. But is that more of a push factor? Is that Carlos Sainz isn't performing to Ferrari standards? Because he looks better the last couple of races, but there have been points in the season and also early last year as well, where he just wasn't looking like he was cutting it, which was a shame because he did look so strong in his first year of Ferrari. But onto the actual rumour that has taken me a little bit unawares, is that Alex Albon has been linked with the Ferrari seat moving forward. Fred Vasseur has denied all knowledge of this. And he has said, I don't know where this story came from. I've run Albon in the past and with friends. If a reporter asked me if Alex is currently doing a good job, I would say yes, but that doesn't mean I'm interested in taking him. We know what F1 is like. We know how silly, silly season can be. You can't ever put too much credit into people's words. You know, before you were saying about, oh yeah, it'll be Max and Sergio in the Red Bull next season. We won't know until we get to Bahrain in 2024, if that is actually the case. And this is true as well. Alex Albon has been in a top team before. I think a couple of things knocked his confidence and it kind of spiraled from there. And those two things were the two Lewis Hamilton incidents. Let's not be shy about this. In Brazil, the end of Alex's first season with Red Bull, or first half season with Red Bull. And then I think it was the very next race, the COVID return in Austria, where Lewis again took him out from a podium paying position, a race that Alex really could have won. So that kind of knocks his confidence, but I think he is showing at Williams that he is good enough to be in a top drive. So Ferrari could be one of those options. So I don't know, guys, do you think that there's something to this? Do you think there should be something to this, actually, more crucially?
I think there's more chance of Lewis Hamilton going to Ferrari than Alex Albon. I think that the fact that we're all discussing the Ferrari lineup just shows how uncertain that team is. And actually, you know, how, Sam, you were just saying Ferrari may be questioning Sainz's performance at the moment. I think both of those drivers are questioning Ferrari's performance at the moment. And I think we're looking at it the wrong way around, because they've got what is, you know, potentially a race-winning car, given a few tweaks here and there. But they've got a team that just can't do it. And they've got Charles Leclerc, who has been, you know, touted as a world champion for so many years now, who's just not getting there. So if he's going to move, it's not because Ferrari want him to move. I think, quite frankly, they should be happy to have Carlos Sainz at the moment and be doing everything to keep him.
I said it on the last race review. Ferrari aren't pulling their weight for the two drivers that they have. I don't think they'd be racing for that team if it wasn't called Ferrari. And Vasseur has said that he was clear with the team at the beginning of the season and with the drivers. He needs to get to know the team first. That is his first concern, getting to know the team, not trying to figure out whether the drivers are going to stay there and doing new contracts for them, which I think is telling. I think there are a lot of issues inside Ferrari internally within the widespread team of Ferrari, because the two drivers are very good. We've seen them win races. As you said, Ollie, Leclerc has been dubbed a world championship, future world champion, but it isn't looking like he'll ever achieve that at the moment. With Albon, he has been doing very well. He has been exceeding. We all know that. I can't see him going to Ferrari. I think for me, he's thriving at Williams at the moment. So I think he needs to have at least another season there before looking at top teams. He is very much talented and skilled enough to be in a top team. But I think at the moment, he should stay where he is, because he is doing so well there. And yes, Williams aren't a top team. They're within the midfield, kind of further up than they have been in the past, higher than both Alphas and Haas. So he is getting eyes on him and he is impressing and showing what he can do. And I think that's what he should be focusing on at the moment.
Yeah, I agree with you, Abby. And I think these rumours are only going to continue for Ferrari. And I think it's a case of, it's not Ferrari trying to bring in a new driver. It's actually them more worried about losing their drivers and then who's going to subsequently take their place. But Alex Albon at Williams, Sam, would you agree, is exactly the right place for, certainly for now?
I think it's a very good environment for him. I think James Vowles has come in, identified some serious deficiencies within the team that have gone unchecked for a couple of decades in some certain areas. And Alex is clearly a confidence driver, as I kind of touched on before, and he's building up his confidence. He looks at home. He's looking like he's probably outperforming the car. He is doing well. And why remove yourself from that situation before you need to? I think he does have a contract for Williams next year, so this is maybe a downstream good problem for Alex to have as to when he makes that step, because I can't see Williams making that step themselves. So Alex may have to move up the grid unless he wants to kind of, yeah, be there or thereabouts for the next few years. But yeah, he's looking like the driver that we saw in his first season, first half a season at Toro Rosso.
Absolutely. And we did see that, you know, Williams was a great place for George Russell as well. He was there a little bit longer than he wanted to be, but that seems to be paying off now. So maybe the return of Alex Albon will take place in the next few years. But that is about all we've got time for today. So thank you very much for joining me, Abby and Sam. Thank you.
Thank you for having us, as always.
Yes, it was very enjoyable.
Tell your voice that.
I'm sorry. I was conscious of my voice from earlier, and I don't want to mention my boyish charm and good looks again. So,
well, thank you for listening. Be sure to head over to formulanerds.com and all the Formula Nerds socials to find out the latest on these and any other stories. But until then, we will see you for the Hungarian Grand Prix review. Goodbye.
You're listening to the Cut to the Race podcast. It's lights out and away we go.
Sports Social Podcast Network.